When a person dies, it's likely that someone they loved and who loved them becomes the one to whom falls the mournful task of going through their personal effects. That sad duty was bestowed on our next guest, renowned author and photographer Bill Hayes, when his partner of 6 years died of metastatic cancer on the 30th of August 2015. And for Bill, it was a uniquely daunting task because his partner was none other than Dr. Oliver Sacks, the world-famous neurologist, beloved author of books such as The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, an anthropologist on Mars and Awakenings, and someone who amassed a collection of 10,000 books during his lifetime. And it was when Bill started going through that massive book collection that he uncovered a beautiful secret, a secret Bill recently wrote about in the esteemed quarterly The American Scholar. Bill Hayes, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bill, before you tell us about this beautiful secret, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit of your story with Oliver.
Well, I actually first met Oliver by mail. He wrote me a letter, amazingly enough, although I later learned that was very typical of Oliver. I was living in San Francisco, where I lived for 25 years, and had published my third book, which is called The Anatomist. It's a nonfiction, narrative nonfiction book that tells the story behind Grey's Anatomy, the classic 19th century anatomy book. And I don't have a medical or scientific background, but I'd always had a copy of Grey's Anatomy. And one day I just thought to myself, who wrote this thing? And I ended up writing a book about Henry Grey, and also attended anatomy classes for a year alongside med students to learn about anatomy. Anyway, long story short, Oliver read my book. And he wrote me a letter, just a very collegial letter via my publisher, Dear Bill Hayes, or Dear Mr. Hayes, I read your book, The Anatomist, and enjoyed it very much. And he told me that both of his parents had been doctors and his two older brothers. And so there was always a copy of Grey's Anatomy in his house. And, you know, I knew Oliver Sacks. I'd read Musicophilia and Uncle Tungsten and other books and his profiles in The New Yorker. So I was really thrilled. And I wrote a letter back. And it was, again, just very collegial, nothing romantic. And it was a very brief correspondence. And then fast forward about a year and a half, I guess, or maybe 2 years, and I decided to move to New York City and essentially start my life over. I had lost a longtime partner of 16 years very suddenly, unexpectedly. He died of a heart attack, a man younger than me. And I was just ready to start a new life. So I moved to New York into the West Village. And I guess I looked up Oliver and said, you know, we'd like to have lunch. But it was more like fellow writers coming together. Hmm. And I was a fan too, I have to admit. We began spending more and more time together, and pretty quickly, to my surprise, as much as to his surprise, we fell in love.
And indeed, though the surprise was mutual, it was perhaps even greater on Oliver's side, mm-hmm. because it was really his first relationship.
It was his first domestic and romantic relationship, and he was, at the time, in his late 70s or mid to late 70s, and had accomplished a great deal, but this was one experience he had never had. And I think it was just kismet. It was just sort of meant to be. And he was open to it in a way that he had never been before. In fact, he has famously said and wrote that he'd been celibate for 40 years. And just, you know, was a very busy working neurologist and physician and author and lecturer, and never really considered having a relationship. And as I said, I was surprised too. I mean, I'd come out of this long relationship that ended tragically. I wasn't really thinking about getting involved, but I was, as we say here, smitten. I just was, he was kind of irresistible. This combination of a very brilliant man, a genius, and I don't use that word lightly, with a very quirky, eccentric, playful, almost like a teenage boy falling in love.
And you've written in great detail about your relationship with Oliver, as well as your relationship with New York City in Insomniac City, subtitle New York, Oliver and Me. You spent 6 years together, and that meant that, regrettably, Bill, I suppose you're a little bit overqualified to deal with the situation of a partner dying.
Yeah.
And you write very touchingly about the emotional sensitivity involved in that task, the really physical task of just going through what's left over. And in the case of someone like Oliver Sacks, it was a big task.
It was big, yeah. He had a big, wonderful two-bedroom apartment in the West Village. He'd had two one-bedrooms joined together and then had had custom-made bookcases built on almost every single wall in the entire apartment, except for maybe one wall in the kitchen. But they were floor-to-ceiling bookcases, completely filled. And he had a grand piano that was his father's, actually. Books were just a big part of his life. And of course, I would scan the shelves and pick out a book now and then. But what I discovered after his death was very surprising.
Yes, this is the beautiful secret that you discovered. And there's a hint of what it is in the title of your American Scholar essay, Thinking in the Margins. So, Bill Hayes, as you started going through these 10,000 books, what did you discover?
Well, I should say right away that it wasn't immediately after he died. Mm. You know, I think he sort of talked about how that's a very delicate process, and the person, or and sometimes the family or the people left to sort through and discard or decide to save things, you just sort of have to do it at your own pace. And I did write my memoir Insomniac City about 6 months after Oliver died, and even traveled to Sydney, to the Sydney Writers Festival, and, you know, all over the world, really, with that book. And that kept me busy. But I think it was around early 2017 or late 2016 that I started really sorting the apartment. And the biggest task was, excuse my language, but what the hell am I going to do with all of these books? Because there were a lot. And I, you know, I collect books too, but not like Oliver. And he had instructed me before his death. His death was very different from Steve's, which was unexpected and sudden. Oliver was diagnosed with terminal cancer in January 2015 and died about 8 months later. So he had instructed me to give some books to certain people, but that still left, you know, 9,000. 550 books on something. And I, you know, just dove in one day and got up on a chair because I had to get to the top shelf. I'm not that tall. And started going through the books shelf by shelf. And pretty early on, I discovered something unexpected, that Oliver was a very prolific annotator of books, meaning marginalia. He would write in the margins of books, on the tops, on the end papers, on the title pages. It's a very specific art, one might say, or impulse, because I don't have that impulse. I don't annotate my books. You know, maybe sometimes I'll dog ear a page and underline something. But Oliver would engage in these conversations with the author, even if the author, like Kant, the philosopher, was 200 years earlier. So, you know, it was a lot of books, and I was dividing them into different categories. There were books that I could tell were not that important, or maybe they'd been sent by publishers and that I could just get rid of. Or there were rare books and first editions. There were first editions of Charles Dickens and Charles Darwin that I knew were valuable, but they had no annotations.
I was going to ask whether they had marginality.
No. Sometimes he had copies of the same book. You know, Charles Darwin was his probably his greatest hero, and so he had several copies of Darwin, but and some of those were annotated, but the first editions were not. And then the annotated books, I would never have expected there would be so many, but I started to see them more and more, And as I said, sometimes you would engage in direct conversation as if you were talking to Kant or to Sigmund Freud or to Charles Darwin or to Nietzsche. And interestingly, more often with philosophers or novelists, or rather than neurologists or medical practitioners, you know, which was his professional field. And there was a period in the 1970s, I discovered, when Oliver read, he was kind of in a long, long writer's block, 11-year writer's block, and he read very deeply in philosophy and religion. And there were a lot of philosophy books. And he would engage in direct conversation. And what also fascinated me is that he would use different colored, often use different colored felt pens, like flare pens. And there's some great examples of Oliver starting a thought in one colored pen and then continuing at the top of the page in another colored pen and going down the sides and the bottom and the middle. And I do think Oliver at certain points in his life had a kind of code for red felt pen meant this and green meant that and purple
yes,
meant
the
that.
Sachs code. I can hear theses starting to be written right now.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary discovery, though, that you've made. And of the large set of 10,000 books, I think there were over 500 that had these comments and marginalia in them.
Yeah, I'm saying 500 that were heavily annotated. Others that might just have a word or two. And then there were some books where he just signed his name, you know, Oliver Sacks, January 1959. But the annotations spanned his entire lifetime.
Yeah, so how far back did they go and when did they end?
They went back to his Oxford days when he was a student in the 1950s. And then they ended, I found, very suddenly in January 2006. And I only really discovered that once I'd gone through all of the books, and I had over 500 annotated books, and began wondering, like, why do the annotations stop? And then I sort of put two and two together. I knew that about a month before January 2006, Oliver had been diagnosed with a pretty rare ocular tumor on his right eye. And it was treated successfully. The tumor was obliterated, though it later metastasized into the cancer that took his life. But it affected his eyesight badly. And the last annotated book that I found is dated January 06. And it's a kind of otherwise forgettable novel by Herman Wouk, an American writer. And he wrote in very large letters as if he was just so angry. He wrote, "The first large print book I have bought in deference to the visual horror that has visited me." He really despaired that he couldn't find large print books that he could, that he enjoyed, that he was interested in. And from then on in his lifetime, he insisted that all of his forthcoming books be published in large print editions. It's pretty rare these days.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Bill Hayes about his essay, Thinking in the Margins, which reveals what Oliver Sacks jotted down in the books he read, as we heard, over a period of 50 years from the 1970s through to 2006. And Bill, you've already given us a little bit of a flavour of the comments that Oliver made. They do sound very characterful. Could you give us a couple of examples of your favorite annotations?
Yes. I mean, I found, this is just my analysis. I'm sure there'll be doctoral students who will dig much deeper, but I found they fell into four categories. Some of them were journal-like entries, and Oliver was someone who kept journals throughout his life. There's 600 handwritten journals in his literary archive, which is separate. So he was a journal keeper anyway, but sometimes I guess the journal, current journal, wasn't at hand and he would just write journal-like musings. So a really poignant one comes in a book that was Joseph Conrad's novel Victory, and he'd taken it to Sydney when his older brother Marcus lived in Sydney, and he was a physician. He was dying of cancer. and he was at Marcus's bedside, just keeping him company, and he was dying. And it's extremely moving. He starts writing on the end papers at the end of the book with the date and keeps writing and writing and goes, runs out of room and then goes to the front of the book and continues his thoughts. And it's a mix of, sadness about losing his older brother and their friendship and relationship, but also just a little bit clinical in a way. He couldn't help being a neurologist. So he's also observing the process that his brother was going through. He asked me for some of my favorites. Well, the most fascinating to me were the philosophy and religion books. He read really deeply in philosophy. Kant, Kierkegaard, Nietzsche, Simone Weil, Foucault, and he would engage in direct conversation. And Nietzsche was someone he especially responded to. So there was one in Nietzsche's book, The Free Spirit, in which this is Nietzsche writing, where Nietzsche finished a paragraph, "We are born sworn jealous friends of solitude, our own most profound, most midnightly, most middaily solitude. That is the type of man we are, we free spirits. And perhaps you have something of this too," as if talking directly to Oliver. "You that are coming, you new philosophers." And then Oliver annotated in the margin, "What a voice, what a proposal, what piercing nakedness of mind. I feel Nietzsche calling to me." But then, in a much more poignant note, in the same volume, there's a collection of Nietzsche's epigrams. And one of Nietzsche's epigrams says, "The thought of suicide is a powerful comfort. It helps one through many a dreadful night." And then in tiny handwriting in the margin, Oliver added, "Yes, indeed." As if, that had crossed his mind too. Sigmund Freud, he had a very fraught relationship with, as many people do, whether they're neurologists or psychiatrists or not. And he had all of Freud's books. And he would often write in big exclamatory letters, "No," and then explain why he disagreed with Freud, speaking directly to him. But then sometimes he was inspired by something Freud wrote, and he would write something that now sounds incredibly profound and almost poetic. And there's a book of Freud's called, Jokes and Their Relation to the Unconscious. I'll try to make this quick, but it's a long annotation. And at the end of one chapter, Oliver, thinking out loud and speaking to Freud, says, "Beside conceptual jokes, can one not have natural jokes, jokes in nature? One can certainly have humor, wit, and fun, but this is not a Freudian unconscious of depressed affect, but a primordial preconscious of polymorphous potential, an original jest." So it's great to see him thinking out loud. Sort of in conversation with Freud, proposing a different angle.
It really does come across as such a rich and distinctive vein of insight into Oliver's life and work. Bill, having gone through this mammoth task of sorting through the books and reading the annotations, what do you feel you discovered about the art of annotation?
It is, by definition, impulsive. One has to get one's thought down now, right now, to reach for that pen on the bedside table. There's no time to go to a journal, no time to pull out a pad. You have to write in the book, and you're writing to the author, him or herself. And that's an amazing thing. And it's amazing to have that record of his thoughts and conversations and ideas over so many years. I think I said earlier that, to my surprise, there weren't a lot of his medical or neurological books that were heavily annotated. But every now and then there was a very lovely line, and he'd gone through some of his own illnesses and, you know, broken bones himself. But in a copy of French philosopher Michel Foucault's book, Madness and Civilization, Oliver jotted a really lovely line, which I think says a lot about Oliver Sacks, the doctor. He wrote, "Patients illuminate the extremities of being. They shine like stars. They allow an astronomy of the human firmament. Doctors must be navigators."
Yes, that really is classic Oliver Sacks, although Oliver Sacks that was just sitting there on a page in a book for years until you discovered it, Bill. It really is extraordinary. And I suppose it leads to the question, what is to become of all these marked up books?
I'm really, really happy to tell you that the New York Public Library, which acquired his literary archive, which is separate. The literary archive is drafts of books, letters, thousands, tens of thousands of letters, journals, etc. New York Public Library very recently acquired the 500 plus annotated books. So they will be part of the archive and soon available not only to scholars, but to the general public. And because they're so wonderfully colorful, probably on display at some point. Yeah, it may just inspire a new generation of annotators.
Well, Bill, it's been delightful discussing this beautiful secret of Oliver Sacks that you discovered. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you for having me. It was a true pleasure.
And Bill Hayes is himself a renowned author and photographer, a Guggenheim Fellowship recipient. And Bill's essay in The American Scholar is Thinking in the Margins, what Oliver Sacks jotted down in the books he read.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.